Nourishment.
Mm.
Uh-huh. Say a little more.
Just feeling a lot of joy of being present, and being back in my body and taking the time out to be intimate with myself again. Being busy.
I just feel really
nice morning meditations of reconnection.
Nice. And helpful, actually. That you speak about. That's the beauty, the relief, the ease, the joy, the nourishment of actually being in the midst of where one's life is, rather than out scrambling at the edges of what's happening. And helpful is really just to let your cells kind of remember that, and let your cells learn that, and so that it doesn't really work to just try and remind ourselves, it's a good idea to be present. But sort of what I don't know how to explain other than that, letting your cells learn it, so it becomes a resource increasingly. So that even in the midst of a level of complexity or activity that may be greater than today, like we were saying, the quality of experience may be different, but the orientation can be the same. Even if what we're attuned to is a little more complex or activated. Nice. What else? Yeah.
I think the thing that we feel that impacts at the moment is that the more like I do it, the more it kind of just brings me into touch with the things I have to deal with then in my life, which is really stressful. Mm. And so then there's like fear and like I know I haven't got a choice, but I don't like it's almost like I don't it's really annoying me that, you know, I've then got to, you know, have these relationships with people and the stress of intimacy and that's what's coming up.
So what's the fantasy? If you didn't have these annoying other human beings to deal with, what's the fantasy of what would be different?
I think it's just that it's not that I don't want that. It's just it's at times it's overwhelmingly stressful for me to deal with.
And so, as you're struck by that, the sense, it's complicated sometimes, right? Whatever, life, complicated. Relationships with people, complicated. Situations get complicated. Feelings get complicated. And I'm wondering how, in the way we've practiced this morning, has it felt like some kind of resource to the simplicity of, rather than animating the retelling to ourselves of all the complexities which drives the stressiness of it. How has it been to just to be simple with feet on the ground, bum on the cushion, breath happening in the body, etc.? Maybe that that's helpful even in the midst of when having to deal with stressful, complex, awkward, difficult, painful, etc. situations that inevitably are there, to have at least part of your attention on that which is simple and immediate and not complicated, right? Which basically the fact that body, there's a lot of our experience that is incredibly uncomplicated. And in fact, it's all taking care of itself. Breath is just breathing on its own. heart is beating on its own, blood is pumping, blood is pumping on its own, digestion's happening on its own, hair is growing on its own. Right? We're aging and getting wrinklier and greyer, all by ourselves, all by itself. And just to the sense of letting your part of your attention, even in the midst of that, which whatever the complex that is that you're dealing with, feel the part that's just that you don't need to manage, you don't need to control, you don't need to make okay. The part that you can trust to happen by itself. And you might just feel into that today, even though my mind might go to this or that difficult situation. And yeah, you've got to deal with that. But both in the dealing with it and in now, when you're not dealing with any of that, right? I mean, that people, those people or that relationship. Just to see if you can feel for the trustworthiness of the way a large part of our experience is managing itself, holding itself, taking care of itself. And you might find that, just actually noticing and contemplating and feeling the way breath is just breathing without me doing anything about needing to do anything about it starts to feel like a support for the bits that I may need to exercise some discernment, some volition, some involvement. Does that make sense when I say it like that?
Sense in which coming to touch with what's going on in the body that she had complexity, you know, if you're contacting tension or stresses or stuff that's been suppressed, I mean, might it actually not be more simple just to be up there than letting that stuff come up?
Well, I don't want to try and persuade you otherwise. So I would just encourage you to find out.
Mm. Yeah, well, I know that does happen.
Right. And I would say the only way to find out is to really explore both. Mm-hmm. Really explore what's it like being just implicated in, invested in, caught up in, reactive around all my abstract interpretations of experience. Right, which you're calling, you know, being up there or something. And what's it really like to actually to leave most of that alone and to let myself actually be in experiential contact with the fact that the most of my experience, it doesn't need me to do anything about it?
No, but it might require a response. I mean, if you're encountering some kind of trauma that's held in the body.
It's might.
Not just a relaxing.
No, no.
Get out.
So the orientation is towards relaxing, but like I think I said earlier in the morning, you know, part of that sounds nice to speak about, just allowing, just relaxing. But the journey into that involves encountering some of the, you know, what's in the way, the stress response, the compulsions, the anxieties, the contractions, the fears, all the ways in which I've learned to avoid myself. If it was just relaxing, we'd do it easily. Right. But of course, the daring too, and the being supported too, and the practicing with that gentle coming into contact and coming into contact is what gives us the capacity to actually meet and hold and allow and relax around, you know, those things that may have various emotional releases to them or put us in touch with all the ways in which I don't want actually to be mindful, I don't want to be in my body, I want to be anywhere else other than here, etc. But I imagine that there's enough recognition in everybody here of the payoff, right? There's enough sense that it's worth encountering the discomfort of whatever reactivity I might find in my body, because something in us knows from our direct experience, or maybe just from intuition, if you like, that that there is actually some kind of rest that's available. And in the case of particularly traumatic things we might come across in the body, then actually the support and working with somebody who understands that can actually, sometimes we can't provide our own holding in the midst of very difficult material we come across. And so working with someone who can do some of that holding for us or with us is important as well. Yeah.
I usually practice alone, so clearly being in a group is quite interesting. And one thing I've been working with for a long time is that I carry a lot of tension in my diaphragm, in my core.
Yeah.
And usually when I'm practicing, I'm working on dropping the diaphragm, and that feels really nice. And just now, I had this really amazing experience of, instead of feeling my diaphragm dropping down, I felt it like a stone. It often feels like a stone right there, and I felt it just fading out, which was a new sensation. It's really lovely, and it felt like a sort of meaning. You know how we all both have this tendency to hunch in towards ourselves, and felt like a really bright opening out. I don't know if that was because I'm practicing in a group or not. That's cool.
Nice. And when there's some kind of habitual tension area that we're used to, we maybe notice often, or we maybe notice just in the sort of crucible of formal meditation practice, maybe. Sometimes we can easily put a pressure on it because we want it to, with all these words we've been using, we want it to soften, we want it to dissolve, we want it to open up. Yeah. And the very agenda we have for it to want it to open is part of what keeps it tense, because it's quite a tense position. Come on, you've got to open. Come on, you've got to open. Like, nothing discourages someone or something from opening as much as you're standing over it saying, come on, you've got to open. Right? Imagine if someone was standing over you while you're meditating. Come on, you've got to be mindful. And often there is someone standing us over. It's just our own internal critical structure. So maybe it's already obvious to you, but you know, often the kindest or most helpful thing we can do for the habitual places of tension is rather than trying to open them or soften them, is being willing to find out about the tension, being able to listen to the tension. Just like if somebody else is upset and tense, it doesn't do any good to say, come on, just relax, everything. It's like, it helps to actually attune to the fact that they're tense, to care for the fact that they're tense, to kind of provide a sort of, a willingness to be there with them, that then actually provides, the person can start to trust that. And so the willingness to just to come to that area of tension gently and kindly and without agenda. Which is, of course, easier said than done. Okay. Yeah?
In meditation practice, I'm dealing with insomnia, very chronic over the last 3 months. And it started in little bouts about 3 years ago after a very big opening. And what I'm noticing, where I can seem fine, I will suddenly be awake in the night, seemingly relaxed, seemingly quiet, but feeling something very wide awake or wired. And I'm noticing it's a subtle but no less powerful fight or flight response going on in the middle of the night. And as a result, my daytimes, if I let it carry away with me, because I'm so wired, I'm buzzing on fight or flight responses all through the day.
Yeah.
And it's really good to come back to the body and the simplicity of your teaching today. Feels like a godsend. But I'm really struggling in the middle of the night to really come back. Something won't let me. Any tips?
Yeah. Nighttime is funny time. You know? There's a quality, the consciousness is often quite different in the night. And they tend to be more, in some ways, more in touch, but also more stimulated in some ways when we're awake. You know, it's like if you start to worry about something at night, it can assume a kind of magnitude that then the next day you look back and say, oh, this is just nothing. But it's kind of, it has an intensity. Night hours often have a kind of intensity. And a lot of people seem want meditation to be some kind of cure for, what's that word? Insomnia. Thank you. And some even report some success. But meditation is generally orientated towards awakening. And in my experience, it doesn't do anything to cure insomnia. If anything, it increases it in some ways. Because it's good capacity there to be awake. So, sleep, okay, body's tired, mind's tired, sleep. But then on awakening, oh, awake. And the good news is that with a certain sincerity of practice and constancy of practice, one tends to need less sleep. So it may be that you're awake more in the night, and if it is, then one uses that as a source of anxiety. Oh, I'm not sleeping enough. I've only had 4 hours sleep. How will I be tomorrow? It seems to me that that's the thing that most conditions the tiredness the next day. Yeah. You go through the day thinking, I only slept 4 hours. That's exhausting. I keep running that thought.
I'm functioning quite well. That's alarming too.
Right, well, I think that's important to notice. You're functioning quite well. Yeah. So that's quite important to notice as a resource for the anxiety that might arise about, you know, the fact that I'm not sleeping so much. So I would say, if you're awake and there's a certain contactfulness and all, and if the sense of body and breath and just allowing body to be lying there as a living tissue in the midst of the universe is enough of a support, then just good. Lie there, be awake, and stay.
Let it be.
If that's not enough of a support, because something in the intensity of the night hours makes the lying there, even though there's a lot of attunement, there's a certain electricness sometimes to it that just feels too uncomfortable to lie with, then I would suggest getting up and doing some walking.
Right.
Walk around the flat or the house, go outside, walk up and down a little bit in the night hours. Wonderful, best time in London, 3 a.m. nobody to disturb. Walk a little up and down, and then go back to sleep with a different just to shift things. So if you get up and drink some hot water, or go for a walk, or sit a little, or something not stimulating necessarily, but something that, and then might be up from 3 to 5, then you go back to bed 5 to 6.30 or whatever, and that tends to be helpful. Yeah. And there's, I don't know if you've read some of this recent research that suggests that sleeping for 7 or 8 hours through the night is a really recent development. And that a few, not only 200 years ago or so, it was very common to have these period of two sleeps. So waking up in the normal, and it's just to normalise. Wake up in the night, normal.
I'm overloaded with research. I've done so much. Okay. That keeps me right up here.
So that would be the suggestion. If you can, just lie there and allow it, and not make a problem out of it. Yeah. Just awake. That's what we do this practice for: to be awake. So awake and lie.
Never
expected. And if that's not enough. Yeah, sitting, walking, something for a while, just to shift channels and not make a problem out of that. What you'd want to avoid is to lie there trying to get to sleep, disaster, or just stimulating thoughts about what's wrong, why aren't I going to sleep, how am I going to be tomorrow, etc., etc. That tends to be unhelpful.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. All right. So, okay, one more.
Yeah, I was just going to say that I really enjoyed the unexpected talking meditation. The working with the kind of dialogue and that on the edge of inner and outer. And I'm just interested about how very different the experience is with words. And sometimes the words seem to come without thinking. And then sometimes it's almost like you have to use the brain somewhere. So, yeah, I was just wondering if there's a kind of aim or... What's the way of working with that, or is it to be not using thinking words and
Well, part of the way is what you're the insight that you're already noticing, right? The fact that most of the talking we do just happens by itself. It's like breathing. We don't, if we actually had to stop and think about what to say next, will be very clunky. Right? And occasionally, if I'm really trying to find out what I want to say, I may go slowly enough to really just listen to experience enough that I find out as I'm going. But most of the time, it's a fluid enough experience. Look, I don't know what I'm going to say next, and yet here it is, and yet there's more of it, and it just keeps happening. And it's actually a very good reflection, a meditative reflection on, you know, the belief we have in self as this solid thing that is controlling and running and deciding things, whereas actually, like we were saying earlier about the resource of paying attention to how much of experience is happening by itself, speaking is by and large the same thing. And that is recognizing that in the speaking is part of the resource of that kind of deepening trusting in our experience, trusting our capacity to be in our experience, trusting the certain kind of natural, amazing mysteriousness with which experience puts itself together and renders itself more or less coherent. Amazing. So when you said you enjoyed it, right, doing that, so what was it about it and about that noticing of the naturalness of speaking that you enjoy? What was it about it? Was it enjoyable?
I think it was the almost being able to be with the other without the words, the feeling that it wasn't that necessary to have the words, but then thinking, oh, this is about, supposed to be about dialogue, so somehow having to reach the words.
Well, you'll have some more opportunity to practice at lunchtime, and sometimes it's true. Sometimes one recognises the what's coming isn't really very relevant, isn't very original, isn't very necessary. Right? Just not bother. And again, the irony is, the more we don't bother with to speak just to fill up space, then we'll let ourselves land and stay with whatever's we're actually noticing, the more chance there is to give rise to something that's actually interesting and original, because it's born of the immediate rather than born of the habitual.
Yeah, that's great.
Okay. Okay, so it's nearly lunchtime now, and I would just to check with Louise, is some time needed before lunch for the setup or something?
20 minutes or so to set it up.
Okay, so we'll take a little time for walking practice before lunch, for maybe 15 or 20 minutes, and then the bell will ring at lunchtime. I'd encourage you to just... to have that same, like we were just exploring about the speaking and lunchtime, just to see how much you can really stay in contactful and curious about your experience, right, in the eating and in the meeting and speaking. So maybe the way we'll do it is maybe the first 25 minutes or so, maybe say the first half an hour of lunchtime after the bell rings, we'll leave that in silence. And that's basically the time it takes for people to serve themselves and sit down. And so those of you who actually really might want to just let go of the world of communication for today, I would suggest you go at the beginning of the food line. And then those of you who serve yourselves first, you'll probably be done eating about after about half an hour. And then when the dining hall starts to get noisier, you can either come back here, which will stay as a silent area, or you can be walking outside, etc. So after the bell rings for lunch, after half an hour, we'll ring another bell, and then the remainder of the lunch period, an opportunity to hang out with each other in the immediacy of experience, an opportunity to practice embodied awareness, and for words to come, and some listening and some responding. And you might just track during the lunchtime as you hang out with each other and speak with each other and listen to each other. You might just track whichever tendency you notice in you, either the leaning out tendency, more kind of compelled outward towards the other, or the more internalizing or withdrawing or contracting tendency. To separate from, not with a sense of making either of those wrong in any way, but just to track if you notice one or the other happening, and to see if you need to do that, or to see to what extent it might be possible if one or the other is happening, if it might be possible to relax that a little. So, and then we'll be back here at about 2:30. So we'll have the bell at the end of lunch for 2:30, and then we can meet back here again.
Can I just make one or two sure. announcements? If you've offered to help set up the lunch, if you come now to the hall, we could do with a couple more volunteers if two more people would be willing. Thanks very much. And if you've offered to help clear up, wash up at the end, please just do go to the front of the queue so you have more time to eat. And if you haven't yet registered, if you could come and register 20 minutes before the end, so that'll be 2:10, 2:15, that would be great. Thanks.
And I'll just, this period before lunch, the walking period, I'll be in one of the classrooms just along here, so if any of you want to just check in with me individually, feel free.